Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. It's JP Kerfoot. How you doing, JP?
I'm really good, thank you, Yaz. Thanks for having me on board. I'm really interested in our chat around a topic that I'm really, really interested and passionate about, the parent-coach relationship in youth sport, and particularly in academy football.
Amazing, amazing. JP, just before we get into the thick of that, really just give maybe opportunity to give you a brief insight around who you are, what you're doing, and we can kind of really get into the thick of it from there.
Yeah, of course. So I have just finished my master's degree in sport and exercise psychology at Sheffield Hallam University. So there I was studying, you know, a range of modules, anything from skill acquisition to, you know, getting populations fitter, healthier. So quite a broad knowledge base. But for my dissertation, you know, I decided to look at the parent-coach relationship because it was very underappreciated. It is very underappreciated. Not many people know too much about it. There's not been a great deal of research on the area. So I just really wanted to apply the findings to a football club, what we already know about the parent-coach relationship, find out a bit more from interviewing coaches and parents at this football academy, and then just have a little look and see what that really means.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's a really pivotal part in terms of youth development in particular, and probably one that's overlooked often too much. You know, my views and my experiences always tell me that, you know, I've personally never met a parent that's got bad intentions.
Yeah.
They're never ill-intended, probably just misguided and miseducated,
yeah,
or undereducated in some cases. And with that, what you get is they're just trying to do their best to support. But there's almost this divide that's been created over the years, and you know, for as long as I've been in coaching and anything I've known related to it, it's always been there where this has been this divide of, right, let's keep the parents over there. Mm-hmm. What happens over here in the coaches discussion stays within the coaches, and it's almost like there's like a real lack of synergy, if you like, whereas, you know, similar to yourself, probably see that actually there's a lot of value in it that hasn't really been tapped into. For me, one of the biggest things is, right, if we can get a parent on board and really buy into what we're doing with the players, they could be the biggest catalyst for us. So just, you know, just kind of touch on that. You know, you mentioned there about applying what we already know about the parent-coach relationship. And obviously, you know, your research was around expanding on that and looking, exploring that further within the academy setting. What do we know about the parent-coach relationship already?
Well, much of the research has came from tennis. So tennis was a really interesting sport, and there were a few researchers who looked into the parent-coach relationship in tennis that really drove this area forwards. And basically, what we know is that coaches for parents are sources of stress. Anything from, you know, lack of transparency to criticism that they hear from the court, from the sidelines, that acts as stress for the parents. So then it's about, well, how do parents deal with that stress? Do they vent their frustration to their children who are playing the sport? Are they a bit frosty with the coaches? All these things, you know, can actually impact the child and their sporting career. But yeah, just building on what you said, it can go one of two ways in coaches' eyes. You know, parents can actually supplement what the coaches are doing, or they can contradict what they're doing. And, you know, I'm sure you yourself, Yaz, you've got, you know, first-hand experience of parents that either contradict what you're doing or supplement.
I think that, yeah, most definitely. Like I said, you know, I think I'm yet to meet a parent that is trying to contradict me, if that's what's taking place in the first place. But what I look to do in particular is actually get in there early and have that conversation with the parents, set some clear guidelines around expectations, what they can expect from me as a coach, and maybe, you know, within, if I'm working in an environment with other coaches, what they can expect from us as a coaching staff.
Yeah.
What we also then expect from them. But also, I'm really big on the idea of, right, if I've got a philosophy, a coaching framework or whatever it is, let me share that with the parents. Let me help them understand what that looks like and what we're trying to achieve and how we're trying to get there. Because if we can get them on board with understanding it, it makes it a lot easier, in my opinion, for them to, well, firstly, be on board with it. Secondly, if there is any questions around it, they can hold us accountable to say, well, actually, you guys said you're going to do it this way. Why is that not the case? And I think for me, a big part of that is actually the coaching staff or the coaches individually allowing themselves to be vulnerable and not have this ego of, I'm the coach, I know all. Because the other kind of consideration and the observation I've made in my time is, because parents don't understand what it is that you're trying to do and what that actually looks like, and because they're undereducated in most cases around what it could and should maybe look like, they don't know what questions to ask. So some coaches, a majority of coaches, a lot of coaches, in fact, are getting away with murder. So, yeah, you know, I think on the other side of it, you know, I've definitely had situations where now that the parents are on board and they understand what I'm trying to achieve with it, you know, there's, like you said, you know, key word, they can supplement everything I'm doing. They're going to have much more contact time with the child than I am. So like, why not get them to understand it so they can maybe reinforce the messages away from him?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And something that you mentioned there was setting out your expectations, basically. And this is something that came through in the data sets that I was coding in my research. We found, it might sound obvious, but, you know, the customs, the expectations and the ground rules of the academy implicitly, you know, set up parameters within which the parent-coach relationship could actually work and function. So what we know about academy football in particular is parents have this, you know, overemphasis on winning. You know, they believe winning is, the main goal. But for coaches, you know, they're not judged on whether their academy team wins. It's more based on, you know, whether they get players to the next age group. So
just on that though, JP, though, yeah, you talk there about parents, you know, they're looking at the winning aspect of things. Was there anything within the research or that led you to explore why that might be the case? Was it a case that maybe the winning aspect of things was possibly the only real measurable aspect of what the parents could look at because of a lack of clarity on what else is actually being measured, if that makes sense?
Yes. Well, as we know, parents are not really active figures in the academy, are they? They come in, they might watch a training session or two, they'll watch the games, but everything else, you know, it's behind closed doors. They won't know about it unless their children, you know, come home and speak to them about it. So, yeah, what you're saying hits the nail on the head, really. This performance aspect, the winning at all costs mindset, you know, it might be because that's maybe the only measurable variable that they have at their disposal. Yeah, awesome, yeah.
You know, just to build on that then, I'm really keen to understand why this was a topic of interest for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting one. So the Category 2 Football Academy, an opportunity came up to be basically be an intern. And the way they pitched it was power dynamics. They wanted to look at power dynamics in sport and what this meant. So I was having a really deep think. I was thinking, what can I really study that's going to have an impact, and what stakeholders might have more power than others? So I fell on coach parents, and I haven't looked back since. It's been really, really interesting. I think the findings that came out are really practical. I think that we'll go on to talk about ways that academies can actually improve the parent-coach relationship and allow and create an environment in which it thrives in. And myself, I've just became a grassroots football coach after I've done this research. And this is my first taste of what actually, the parental influence in sport and what it means. And I have to say, you know, I've used my knowledge, I've used my awareness to sort of navigate and negotiate those relationships with the players' parents at times.
So, you know, just on that, then, you know, you mentioned obviously that this is your first real grappling with this kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Is it aligning itself with what the research, what we originally knew about parent-coach relationships? And more importantly, how is that then contrast, if any, or even compared to a lot of the research? You know, a lot of research he's talked about was tennis, obviously an individual sport. Are there any major differences or variables that are kind of we need to take in consideration from individual sports as opposed to maybe team sports?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so from my own experiences, you have the parents that come and support their children, the parents that are shouting from the sidelines at every refereeing decision. These are what we would call over-involved parents, basically. These are the parents that, you know, when the game's done, it's not really done for them, because they'll go home, and on the journey home, they'll be talking about the game to their children. It'll be them driving the conversation. It won't be the child driving the conversation. It'll be them getting their point across, their opinion across. Oh, why didn't you do this? When this happened, you should have done this. So, it's been interesting to see, you know, the different types of parents that you get. You get some that would, you know, just be submissive bystanders, really. Just come, show their face, not really get too involved. In terms of the individual sport difference, what we found was basically there was one slight difference, and that was for something like tennis, coaching credentials were really, really important for parents. Whereas in football, that wasn't the case as such. So I was really
keen to explore that. So yeah. Why do you think that was? Because is it because maybe in tennis there's a much lower number of volunteers potentially?
Well, basically, bit of background, you know, we have, through impression management, we have a number of cues that we pick up on. So we have static cues. So these are things that won't really change, like your ethnicity, your hair color, maybe, unless you diet, you know, things like that. dynamic use are things that can change. So where you live, your accent can change. And then we have third party cues. So this could be, you know, a headline in the newspaper article, you know, having a little browse on the internet, seeing, you know, a rating on something or someone. So coaching credentials, they would fall under, you know, third party cues if they're available on the internet. For a sport like tennis, it's my understanding that it's up to the parents to sort of, you know, source their coach, right? Okay. In football, you enter an academy, there's already a supply of coaches at the academy. So it's not up to the parents to decide. That's not in their decision making process. They might decide that the academy they go to, okay, if there's a number of options. But for tennis, you know, a coach, the coach athlete relationship is absolutely huge. So there's a really good film out there called King Richard. It's based on Serena and Venus Williams's father and the role he has. So he came from, you know, a coaching background, and he just, as the film progresses, it's a really accurate portrayal. You know, he's sort of wrestling with his identity as a coach and his identity as a parent at the start. You know, he's basically holding their hands, and then as the film progresses, they get older, he slowly lets go and passes the responsibility and control over to a coach, a world-class coach.
I think you're spot on, but there's two key things that you've really touched on. Obviously, that, you know, the athlete coach relationship within tennis is huge, but surely that's because it's one one-to-one kind of element.
Yeah,
it's an individual sport. So what were the differences that we saw in terms of the athlete coach relationship when we now explore the football aspect of things?
Yeah. So basically, the coaches, they sometimes felt they didn't have enough time. And it goes back to, you know, the one-to-one versus in a squad of players that you're responsible for, you might have 16. So it goes down to the time constraints that they felt they were under, especially for the part-time staff. They felt that it could have been, it was surplus to their requirements to actually focus on their relationships. But then they also said, if I was full time, I would without a doubt pay more attention to these relationships. It's just not a focus for me at this moment in time. Another barrier was the fact that these part-time staff couldn't be administered into the WhatsApp group chats for safeguarding reasons. So there was automatically that disconnect from the parents.
Just, you know, talk about the one-to-one time and the time available, and that's obviously a key piece. Was there anything that kind of came out around how much time a one-to-one coach felt was optimal? Did they need an hour or actually, because it was one-to-one, they could get at what they wanted to maybe within 25 minutes, or, you know, any sort of insight around that sort of stuff?
Yeah, it really did vary. It really varied across the board. It goes back to that old adage, you know, you can please 99 people, but that it can sometimes be one person that you don't please. So you had these, you know, start of the year inductions, you had these meetings, performance meetings, and there was also a tour that people talked about where they went across to a different country, and they thought that was really, really important and pivotal to, you know, solidifying some relationships, because, you know, the parents seeing a different side to the coaches seeing a different side to the parents. So it gave the coaches some more exposure. But yeah, in terms of the times, there wasn't an optimal time, if that makes sense.
No, definitely. You know, just think it's an interesting point to consider, because obviously, you know, we're talking about time here, but actually, you know, my view is always, it's not so much how much time you have, it's what you do with it.
Yes.
If I've only got 10 minutes interaction with a player, what is those 10 minutes? Am I maximising my impact in those 10 minutes? Am I squeezing all the juice out of the orange, if you like? So I guess, you know, to build on that, you know, you talked there a little about the different interactions that coaches could have with athletes. Now, one of the most common things you're going to identify, obviously, within academy settings, is probably even in tennis, of course, because it's a one-to-one thing, is, you know, the focus around individual development plans.
Mm-hmm.
What did we learn about that in terms of... What did we learn about that in terms of individual development plans and how they fit in with that parent-coach relationship? Should parents even be there? Was there a preference around what that looks like?
Yes, there was. There was. So there was one coach who basically spoke about sometimes this physical distance from parents is needed, because obviously you're having a three-way conversation, okay? It's primarily with the child. If you're the coach, the parent's going to be there, okay? But then the child will be given answers that are sort of socially desirable to both the coach and the parent to appease them both. And so you've got this mismanagement. And so that's something that came through. A parent didn't really like the setup of it. Basically used this analogy that it was like a court system where the player is a defendant and then the coach is the judge, and didn't really like the feel of it. So basically this parent said that what could be better is, you know, more thought into who is actually doing the meeting, who's conducting the meeting. If a player needs work on their defence, bring in the defensive coach, okay, have a meeting.
It's quite an interesting point, because what you get in academies in particular is obviously that whole idea of, they talk about how much time they want to spend with multiple disciplinary teams and so on and so forth, but actually, in reality, there's always a lead coach who leads the whole process.
Yes.
You've got your sports scientists, you've got your strength and conditioning coaches, whoever else is involved in that process, really they're only involved to the extent at which the coaches allow them to be. So it's interesting to hear you say that actually the person that delivers that feedback is obviously a key factor for the parents and the child as well. And in terms of the, you know, the that kind of courtroom kind of feeling, so, you know, what was the guidance, and was there any surprise cases as to, if there was any insight at all around who they maybe wanted to lead those actual interactions?
Yeah. So this coach basically gave the example of their son losing focus. So they said that they could, if they identified this, they could say, oh, we're going to have the meeting led by someone who's... expertise lies in, you know, attentional control, focus, that sort of thing, and we're going to let them lead the meeting. So yeah, that was just one example. This parent also said that, you know, their coaches could actually lean on parents more often, and almost collaborate and cooperate together rather than resist one another.
What would the collaboration look like in that context? Because this is a key thing for me. In the work that I do as a coach developer, especially when I'm working in that capacity,
yeah,
I'm massive on coaches trying to build those relationships with parents. And that's the exact word I use. You know, can we collaborate with parents around the development of this young player, whether it's, you know, foundation phase, right through the PDP, doesn't matter how old they are, what gender they are. Can we take more time and be more proactive in building that relationship, trying to find out what makes this player tick, because that player, that parent, rather, will have insights you can never get.
Yes. So because they spend more time with them.
Well, that's it. They've seen them grow. They've seen, you know, if they've got particular characteristics, they can give you some insight as to where that might have come from.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Something to tap into that. Once you get that knowledge and that insight, the depth of the relationship that you can build with that individual just based on that knowledge alone, you know, it's you know, who knows how far it can get you, but it's those little things that you can tap into, which are maybe a lot, you know, in a lot of cases, stones that are left left unturned by everyone.
Yeah, of course. So one way that coaches and clubs could actually collaborate with parents is just by upskilling them. There have been loads and loads of research on education, and it's had some very good outcomes, to be fair, in changing their behaviour. Something like a newsletter. So if you work in the sports science department, you could have a month where you send a newsletter home. You'd have some easily digestible nuggets of information. This means this. This is what you can do at home. And then the parents can go away and reinforce that at home. One of the coaches said that parents can also act like a second coach at home. So almost carry on the work that's being done in the academy setting and taking that into a home setting. So a newsletter, simple idea, wouldn't take long, okay? A monthly newsletter. And then once the sports science department has sent one out, next month, a different department could send one out.
I think it's a brilliant idea. I think, you know, it just really reminds me of something that I've done recently. So I actually run a grassroots club as well. And one of the things that I do is actually, once every kind of 6 to 8 weeks, I actually bring the parents in and do like a CPD with them. Follow up on whatever CPD I've done with the coaches, but actually then follow up with the parents, get them to understand what it is that we're trying to do. Allow them to ask their questions, allow them to get the insights that they're looking for, just so really they can put one and one together and actually get two.
Yeah.
And not just you know, look at it, you know, and be like, well, why are they doing that? That's not what we're used to seeing. Well, it's not about what you're used to seeing. It's about what we're trying to achieve. And this is the method that we're going to use to do it. But yeah, if we don't explain that to you, and if we don't give you the rationale as to why we're going to do it that way, these questions are always going to be up here. And when these questions are up here, there's a lack of clarity. And then the player's got lack of clarity on what's happening. Parent might be thinking, should I stay? Should I go? Should I take my kid elsewhere?
Yeah.
So there's so many factors that it can have a knock-on effect with. And I think that bit's really key. One of the other things I kind of look at and suggest that, you know, coaches and even just organisations and clubs to think about as well is there's this massive, you know, draw for parents to think about the result on match day. But again, I think like we said earlier, it's probably the only real measurable variable that they can look at. So one of the things I started doing in recent years was maybe supporting parents with some sort of feedback sheet.
Yeah.
That after the games, they can actually explore different types of questions with the player, much more reflective questions, rather than, you know, the age-old question was, you know, how did you do today? Did you score? Or whatever that looks like. And I'm not saying that's everyone, but, you know, I'm using that as a loose example. It's actually, how did you do today? Mm-hmm. What do you think you did well? You know, is there anything that you felt that, you know, you maybe could have improved on? Is there anything that you saw the opposition do that you thought, okay, that was quite decent, or whatever that looks like? Just becoming a lot more reflective and self-aware around the experience of the game rather than the result of the outcome of the result.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, in that process, then, how does again, you know, how does that then again differ from that individual sport piece you mentioned about King Richard, which is obviously, you know, I think a fantastic film and great insights around how he approached it. But one of the things that really stood out for me was he knew what he wanted in a coach.
Yes.
He knew what he was looking for. Now, there's a bit of insight from him because maybe he's experienced it as a coach. So he's got some, and this is part of the reason why I believe in doing the education piece with the parents and doing the CPDs with the parents, because actually I want parents to know what they're looking at when it's happening, so they can see what they're looking at when it's not happening.
Yeah.
And that way they can hold the coaches accountable to that.
Yes, yes. So one parent, what was really important for her was having a coach that was compassionate, that you would see, you know, having banter with the kids. She said that, you know, she would get an idea of what a coach was like just through the stories that the child would come home and say. So that goes back to, you know, third party cues and the impressions that parents can easily form of coaches. And that sounds like a brilliant initiative that you've set up in, you know, the feedback forms. I had a coach ask me, you know, what should parents say out of interest? And I said, sometimes nothing. That's the best thing. Nothing. It should be, you know, the child initiating the conversation first. Okay. After, it might take a while, but after they've processed all the emotions, okay, of the game, and then that's when you can offer your input.
I think you make such a great point, and it just brings me back to a conversation quite recently in the last few weeks that I had with a parent. Again, you know, they brought the child over and said, oh, so-and-so thinks this, so-and-so thinks that. I said, okay, but let them say it then. If that's what they think,
yeah,
how about you go over there, Dad, and let me have that conversation?
Yes.
Right? And until we get to the point where so-and-so is going to say those things to me from their own mouth, I don't want to speak to you.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right. Only thing you should be asking me is there a game on the weekend?
Yes.
Right. Nothing about the performance, nothing about the development, no concerns, no queries, anything. I want to hear on it coming. If it's really from the player, let the player ask the question.
Yeah.
Now, some people are like, well, yeah, but you know, Yash, you might not always get the player to go, you're brilliant. If the player don't have, if it's that important to the player, they'll ask it.
Yeah.
And that's my honest belief, you know what I mean? And they said, well, yeah, but what if the player's not confident? Well, they're going to have to learn it from somewhere. And the parent ain't going to be there for the rest of their life. So for me, I think, you know, it just goes to show how much football can be used as a life skills tool more than anything else. So, you know, just talk about that a little bit then, you know, in terms of, have you found that actually parents, you know, you mentioned, you used two words earlier around supplement or contradict. Do you feel that parents are actually conscious when they're doing either or is it just because they're of the intended outcome, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so obviously you do get parents that live vicariously through their children. It might have been a goal of theirs when they were younger, and now they're living their dream through the child. In terms of, you know, this idea of supplementing and contradicting, I do believe parents know, definitely, but I feel that the emotion sometimes overrides the logic. So we can say all about what we should do, okay, this will help your child's psychosocial development, but it won't necessarily happen. The parents, for whatever reason, won't carry that out. As we know, One parent said that, you know, academy football isn't an arbitrary thing, it isn't painting lines on a road, it's emotion, and they like to have emotion as part of the game. Well, yeah, and going back to, you know, your interactions with the parents, I'm really interested in the meetings that you had with them. What did the general trajectory of the meeting go like? Were they, you know, both, was it solution focused? Were you both on the same side? Was there any rifts at all?
So I mean, it was a proactive thing on my part in the sense of, right, this is something I'm gonna do. It wasn't necessarily something that was requested, if you like. I took it upon myself to basically say, right, just to give a bit of context, you know, we've developed this new philosophy, developed a new framework, a new program of, you know, a curriculum, whatever you want to call it. And even in terms of the approach of how it's going to be delivered. So I'll give you an example. We you know, in this environment I'm working in, unopposed practice is banned. Mm-hmm. It literally, coaches are not allowed to use unopposed practice. Now, parents might look at it and say, well, everywhere we go, we see it happen. Yeah, that's great. That's fantastic, but it's not going to happen here. So I need to help you understand the reason for why. You need to really understand the why. And I think that bit was really key for me. So from that standpoint, like I said, it was a proactive approach for me to try to write, let's get this conversation in place. Let's have, if there's any questions around what we're doing, great. But actually, this meeting is not about your questions. It's about me giving you the information I need to give you. And if you've still got those questions, fair enough. But yeah, my idea is that once I present this to you, all those questions will be answered. What are we trying to achieve? Why are we trying to do it in the way that we're doing it? What are our outcomes and blah, blah, blah. So at first it was like, well, you know, and I'm just speaking on their behalf, if you like, but I would say that the impression from the parents was almost, we don't know what to expect here. We don't know what's going to be spoken about, what's not going to be spoken about. We don't know which direction this is going to go. And all we know is that we've got questions and potential concerns that we might want to raise, but actually, let's see where this goes. However, what I did see is that following that first meeting, because I've done it twice now with two separate kind of pieces of content, following the first one, it was almost like, okay, we like the sound of this. Got no idea what it looks like or what it means, but it sounds good. So we're on board. But then obviously as time goes on, you know, they only know what they know. So they're looking at it, they're thinking about it, and it's observing, observing, observing. And now it's part of, right, now we've got to give you the next layer. We've got to give you a bit more insight, a bit more detail around how it's going to work. So giving you the outline, giving you the structure, and giving you the framework in that respect. But now it's about how we're doing it and why we're doing it in that particular way.
Yeah.
So in the second meeting, because there's only been two so far, it was actually a bit of a CPD from a perspective of, right, I've delivered some CPD content to the coaches the week before around, if you like, the research pieces that link in and support the methodology, if you like. And it was right, well, I'm going to present that to the parents as if it was a coaching CPD. Yeah. Explain them, you know, obviously understand that they're probably going to be at a different vantage point than the coaches. So be open to the fact there might be different types of questions, which I'm happy to take on board. And I think that's probably, now that I think about it, probably one of the key things that's really helped in everything is I'm very open to taking the questions, whether it's a parent, whether it's a player, I'm really open to taking the questions, because, you know, just one of the things that I kind of live by is, well, I want the questions, because if I can answer the question, then I get to learn it twice. I need to be sure about what I'm saying. So if a parent, or rather, if I go back to even as a coach, if a player challenges me or questions me on something that I'm doing, I encourage that. I actually embrace that, because it's sort of, like I said, it's an opportunity for me to really be sure, actually, do I really know what I'm talking about here?
Yes.
Or am I just trying to blag it?
Mm-hmm.
And the first one, I actually actively encourage players to ask me questions. And then that then tells on to, obviously, the parents as well. Ask me questions. If you're not sure about what you're looking at or why we're doing it, ask the question, because I want to be able to explain it to you and give you absolute clarity on what that is. And if I don't have absolute clarity on what it is, well, now I've got to hold myself accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from experience that the only way I'm going to get better at doing what I do and helping players get better at what they want to be able to do is if I can take accountability for what I'm actually delivering.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that gives you a bit of insight, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like this quite, you know, forward-thinking approach is reaping some benefits for yourselves. And it's giving the parents some autonomy as well. It's involving them in the process. And
just as you mentioned, it just triggered another thought of mine. Is obviously in the last CPD, as an example, with the parents. So behind the scenes, we'd already been trying to prep, if you like, a a glossary of terms and phrases for the coaches to kind of use, so that is there's a consistency across the board. Because obviously coaches come from different environments, different experiences. So this word means one thing to you and one thing to me and one thing to him and her and whatever. So actually, no, we need some alignment in that language. So it was actually sharing some of that with the parents. It's a look. We understand you want to support. We understand you want to help. We understand what you want your players, you know, your children to get better at playing football, and you want them to have success. But we don't like the words you're using.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not your fault, because you don't know what you don't know. However, this is what we're going to do. We're going to educate you. We're going to support you and help you to understand the words that we're trying to use in this environment. But more specifically, not just the words, but what they actually mean and when you might want to use them. So that bit was really, I think that bit was really taken well, in the fact that they had some guidance. There was autonomy for them.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, right, we're actually being involved in the process. But we've also got some guidance to work in. And I'm with the coaches, with players and parents in particular. I don't believe in absolutes. So often for me, it's almost like, right, well, here's this box. This is what the box represents. This is what's inside the box. Go wherever you want within it.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, actually, this is a straight line, you can't come off it.
Yeah. I really like that analogy about the box. And obviously, we know from the research that feedback is massive. Parents want the opportunity to be able to feed information back and try and change something. As we know, you know, parents are involved in the community. So from what you were saying then, you're trying to build a culture. Well, that's going to benefit the parents, which will have a knock-on effect that will benefit the children. And so it's a win-win for everyone. If you don't get feedback, well, you know, that old adage of persistence without insight will lead to the same results.
Yeah, do you know what? It's really interesting to say that. So one of the things that just kind of reminded me that actually takes place in this environment, and I shouldn't really say this unless, because if one of the coaches are hearing, they won't like it. But I actually actively ask the parents to give me that feedback.
Yes.
And I'm so keen on educating them about what we're trying to achieve in the environment that I've actually gone as far as saying to them, look, this is what you should be seeing in the environment. These are the expectations that you can have up from us as coaches.
Yeah.
Now that you've got clarity on that, if you don't see it, call the coaches out.
Yeah.
Call the coaches out, because I think that's when you're truly going to get the full input of everyone. That's when you're going to get the full efforts of the coach to recognize, actually, I can't just come in today and blag it.
Yeah.
Because even if the parents don't say something to me directly, they're going to feed it back.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you said the coaches are going to do X, Y, Z. Today, they only did X. But we, you know, you told us Y and Z was also going to happen in every session. Y and Z didn't happen today. Why is that? Well, okay, brilliant. Now, first of all, let's raise that with the coach. Coach can tell you Y and Z didn't happen. It's not to say that Y and Z shouldn't have happened, but actually, let's try and understand if there was a genuine rationale. If there's a genuine rationale, we've got that open communication, that honesty, and that transparency piece, which you touched on earlier, then call it out. Here's the reason why we move on. But you've always got the opportunity to, if appropriate and required, to call it out. Call it for what it is, see it, say it, and deal with it. And that's the only way, in my opinion, that we're going to get continuously progressive and get better at every session. If, you know, just with motivation alone, coaches can't always hold themselves accountable.
No.
They dip, they go up, they go down. There's peaks and troughs in their motivation, the peaks and troughs in how enthusiastic they can be about their roles and positions within clubs. So if someone else is holding us accountable, that's going to really put us under pressure. But the type of pressure that I believe that we need in order to be the best that we can be, not the type of pressure that we, you know, that's just there for the sake of it.
Yeah. And coaches very often will passively wait for feedback. And from what I'm hearing, that's not what you do. You actively seek it. So that's great that you're actively seeking it. That's one way to elicit some feedback. What we know is that parents are sometimes reluctant to give feedback. They think that it might impede the child's chances of being selected for the team. That's something that came through. But at the end of the day, parents are investing a lot of money, a lot of time in the process. So why shouldn't they be given the opportunity to offer some feedback? And I know myself, from reading, I think it was one study, this hockey coach got into the habit of, at the end of every session, he would do a perimeter of the court and he would just speak to parents. And so, you know, at the end of my training sessions, I'll stay behind 10 minutes, 15 minutes until the parents are gone. And then one parent, you know, came up to me and was talking about how, you know, his friend's son is getting certificates and medals, and he was getting a bit down because, you know, there's not many opportunities to get that. You know, he was very externally motivated, which I understand. So, you know, this led me to reflect, and I went home and then got some certificates and brought them to the next session. But I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't, if I'd have been oblivious and, you know, didn't actively seek it.
But do you know what? For me, I look at the feedback piece and I say to myself, right, if parents can give me feedback, what's only going to benefit me? Mm-hmm. And my challenge, again, you know, like I said, you know, I do a lot of work as a coach developer, and my challenge to coaches all the time is do you want to feel better or do you want to get better?
Yes.
Right? And just, yeah, be honest with yourself. If you want to feel better, don't come and work around me. Because I ain't going to make you feel better. But I'll stretch and challenge you to get better. And this is one of the mechanisms I'm going to use to do it. So even if the feedback isn't coming from me directly, right, there's about 15 parents that are watching every single one of your sessions. This is what they're telling us. Yeah. Never mind the feedback I've got for you. But that's what the parents are telling us. Now, if the parents who maybe don't know anything, if you like, have got constructive and effective observations around your coaching, I don't need to say anything.
No.
Do you understand? So for me, the parent giving the feedback, you know, I used the word earlier about culture. The culture that I'm trying to set in this environment in particular, and I encourage coaches to think about, is can you set that culture of open, honest communication and transparency between coaches and parents? Because if you can get that, the feedback that the parents will give you, A, gives you an opportunity to learn about the observations from an external standpoint. B, it also gives you an opportunity to educate the parents around maybe some of their misguided observations around what the feedback actually is. Because they may have observed something, but because they don't have the rationale behind it, they assume it's one thing over the other. But that's your opportunity to get more buy-in from the parents. That's the way I see it anyway. So, I mean, it's really interesting to kind of think about it now that I'm listening, you know, having this conversation, reflecting on some of those moments. Question for you, though. Obviously, you know, you've talked there about some parents being reluctant to offer feedback.
Mm-hmm.
But where there has been feedback, how has that been sought after? How has it been fed back? How, you know, was there particular questions that were asked? Was there particular settings that were designed and environments that were put together to make that happen?
That's a very, very interesting question, and that needs to be asked, really. So parents and coaches would communicate generally over, you know, mobile phone. For clarification purposes, a quick message could sort and solve everything. But if there was a sensitive issue, this is where things would change. The first contact would be over a message, but then it would be to arrange a meeting. Okay. But parents, some parents, well, one parent in particular stressed that she would only speak to a coach who she was really familiar with if it involved a sensitive issue. Another coach said that, you know, there's sometimes a stigma around issues that are going on at home. So it might be that they just don't learn about that information and they don't get any feedback. So yeah, for anything that was sensitive, it was an in-person meeting at the academy premises.
Yeah, you make a great point. parent requesting a particular coach obviously sits in on that meeting or leads that meeting maybe, and acts as if you're like a source of support in that conversation. I'm really interested to know, obviously, if that person is no longer there, how is that approached?
Exactly. That's the point that I raised to the academy when I presented my findings. And what I basically said was a way to mitigate this. Okay, say, for example, they're on holiday or something. You could have, you know, gave a little introduction to other coaches or something, you know, a little fact sheet about coaches.
Yeah, because the thing is, JP, when they're on holiday, there's always an opportunity to say, look, let's push that back until they come back.
Yes.
I think the real danger is, well, when that person, let's just say they moved on, they're not at the club anymore.
Yeah.
Club are, you know, are in the land of unknown now, aren't they?
Yeah. And I do realise, you know, coaches come and go. It's the nature of academy football. It's highly volatile, and things can change from one day to the next. But coaches or clubs can be proactive and, you know, make sure that parents are very are welcomed. Okay, if they feel welcomed, the coaches are being open and receptive to any feedback that they get. And so these things will contribute to whether a parent will or will not go to a coach to discuss any sensitive issues.
Yeah, so again, another key point to kind of touch on, you know, you obviously mentioned that, you know, the part-time coaches weren't privy to certain conversations because of safeguarding issues. What happens now in that situation there if the coach that they're actually liaising with and have got a good relationship is a part-time coach?
Yes. So that's a really, really interesting point. It's got me a little stumped. Yeah, so the part-time coaches, they would report to what we call, you know, a lead phase coach. Okay, so they would deal with all of the admin work and things like that. Okay, and then what would happen is the phase coach and, you know, a part-time coach, okay, who's more on the ground, okay, doing the sessions, they would get together, and we call this, you know, collusion. They would come up with a, you know, consensus, and then they would go back to the parents. And one parent actually said, you know, it's I'll try and quote it word for word. It's almost as if they're saying the same spiel to pacify people. And they're just regurgitating the same spiel to pacify people. And that was quite a damning quote, that they didn't think that the coaches were being totally transparent with them.
Well, it's an interesting one. You know, I'm asking this quickly. You know, I understand the dynamics and, you know, the workings of an academy environment in particular, and knowing that majority of the coaches that actually operate and interact with the team themselves are probably the part-time coaches, especially in the foundation youth development phases. With generally the lead phase, who's the full-time member of staff, or if there's more than one of them in each phase, overseeing that process rather than actually having the full-on contact time, if you like. So it's a bit of a conundrum, isn't it? Because you've got these part-time members of staff who've got the most contact with the players.
Yes.
You've got these members of staff who have the least contact with the players actually leading on the process.
Yes.
And you're expected to be, you know, if you like, the spokesperson for the organisation within the environment.
Yeah. Yeah, and the part-time coaches, it's worth mentioning, couldn't just go off their own backs and reach out to these parents. They had to double check, okay? They had to ask permission. Can I, you know, have a word? I think it'd be a benefit if I spoke to that person. But then the phase lead would have to give permission, basically, and say yes. So yeah, it was a really awkward dynamic that was going on.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine, because like I said, you know, not only have the part-time coach probably got a stronger relationship with the player, or a more, you know, higher opportunity to have a strong relationship with the player, but also the connection with the parent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in many situations, you know, now I've worked with a lot of players in and outside of academies, and, you know, linking back into what you said earlier about having particular people lead meetings and stuff like that. You know, I was working with a kid not too long ago, and he'd been released from a Cat 1 club.
Mm-hmm.
He's now ended up at another Cat 1 club, but he'd been released by a Cat 1 club. But the feedback he was given, in my opinion, he's been given just to give him more context, goalkeeper. Yeah. He's been given goalkeeping feedback, but the goalkeeping coach wasn't part of the process.
Yeah.
So it's almost, and that's probably the best example I think you can probably find where actually, no, you need someone who's maybe not that lead coach to be involved in that process, in some way, shape or form, at least, even if they're sitting in on the meeting, if you like. Because, you know, there's always the argument to say, well, you know, the sports scientist can feed into a lead coach and this person can feed into a lead coach. But actually, if we're now talking position specific, an individual position that probably has a very specialist skill set, obviously, is the goalkeepers. Not to say that you don't need specialist skills to be in other positions, but the understanding of the position is very different. And, you know, not every coach may necessarily possess the finer detail that's required to support that individual as best as possible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really interesting. So, out of curiosity, in any of the research that you've looked at, and even in the workings of the academy, was the goalkeeping coach part of that?
Not that I know of. But yeah, I think it just demonstrates that, you know, the flaws that can appear in a multidisciplinary team, can't it? Another point that was raised was that coaches would use quite murky language, okay? So in the social sciences, this is what we call, you know, strategic ambiguity. So what its intention is to basically put you in a defensible position so that if anything happens in the future, they come back to what was said.
Yeah.
It can go, what you said could mean one of 5-6 things.
It's a really interesting point because the number of parents who I know have gone into academies and had that type of interaction. My advice always is to them, ask the questions, because they will fob you off at every given opportunity possible.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask them the questions and they can't answer it, now they have to be held accountable.
Yeah. Like,
coaches will do that. Whether it's malicious or not is a separate discussion, but they will try and get away with ambiguity. So yeah. My question to, you know, my advice to all parents, you know, even if anyone's listening to this, in fact, if your kid is in that situation, do not leave that conversation unless you have absolute clarity. So if they say, oh, well, you know, so-and-so needs to work on this, this, and this. Okay, but what does that look like?
Yeah.
How do I know when they've been able to work on it? And first of all, not only when they've been able to work on it, but how do I know that they've actually got to the point that you've said they need to be at?
Mm.
What do I look at? So again, essentially, going back to the education piece, looking at what we talked about earlier on the variables that they use to measure things. How well, as coaches, as clubs, as organizations, are we equipping the parents to measure success?
Yeah.
And I think that's what it all comes down to. Are we doing that enough, if we're doing it at all?
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I would just echo that. Some research that came out of, I think it was France, basically made this point that it can take academy parents up to 4 years to become fully socialized into the system. But 4 years, as we know, that's quite a long time. So parents come, and then after 2 years, maybe their son's released. They haven't really became accustomed to what the club stands for, what it's about.
What does a fully socialized look like?
So, understanding the customs of the club, the expectations, that will be another example. The norms, the normative behaviors, okay, what behaviors are appropriate.
So, for instance, if I'm a parent, how would I demonstrate I'm fully socialized and my understanding of those things is in place?
So, one example is in my research, okay. Parents were not encouraged to speak to the coaches before kickoff. They were also not encouraged to shout from the sidelines. This is what would be deemed socially unacceptable behaviour, non-normative behaviour. So a parent who is adhering to these, you know, implicit customs, okay, that would tell me that they potentially have become socialised.
So we're just trying to get a bit of clarity on that. Is it that they were not encouraged, or they were encouraged to?
They were not encouraged to shout from the sidelines, okay? There was a small window of opportunity.
What happened if they did?
Nothing. My understanding is nothing. It was more of an implicit rule rather than a formal rule.
Right.
Yeah. So parents could do that, okay? But one parent said that, you know, it was not to be encouraged. It wasn't the way to go.
Okay. So, you know, obviously that's one way of obviously demonstrating whether I'm fully socialized into this process. But what happens now if I'm an introvert?
If you're an introvert?
Yeah, I'm a parent, I'm an introvert. How would you assess whether I'm fully socialized in this process? Because you wouldn't see me shouting from the sidelines regardless.
No. So for clubs that have discouraged this shouting from the sidelines, okay, an introvert could find that that's perfect. That's a perfect environment for them. Whereas an extrovert, that might be a bit hard for them. So I know we've just came off the back of Silent Week, haven't we? I think it was an FA initiative. So I have a parent of a child that I'm coaching who's, you know, really loud from the sidelines, will criticise players openly. He'll shout, not only about his son, but to other players as well. And I know that this is a bit of an issue. So before the game, I said to him, it's Silent Week this week, okay? Just to prime him, okay? Because this would be quite uncomfortable for him. And he basically said, oh, it's a load of rubbish. Don't agree with that. And so I thought, oh, this doesn't bode well, does it? I kid you not, 10 seconds in, he is mouthing off to our goalkeeper. Not anyone else, not his son, our goalkeeper, okay? It got so heavy that the opposition managers actually called out to him, just take a step back. And the second half, he was brilliant. You know, one of our players lost the ball, and it was encouragement. It was, you'll get it next time, you'll get it next time.
And it's a really interesting point. It's an amazing one, because in that situation, really what's happened, he's been held accountable.
Yes.
The accountability has caused the change in behaviour. And that's, you know, that literally sums up what it is that I was trying to create in terms of the culture from the parents and the coaches in this environment I'm working in. But, you know, that's a perfect example of that. You know, but JP, there's so many different facets to this parent-coach relationship thing. Yeah. I guess the question people are probably thinking about right now listening to this is, yeah, this is all fantastic. You know, this airy-fairy place of great coach, great parent relationship. And, you know, it would be wonderful if the parent wasn't stressing us out, asking us for how many minutes our son's going to play or our daughter's going to play, you know, or paying attention to the fact that actually the player that she came on for or he came on for played 2 minutes more than her or him. It's like, well, these are, you know, just one minor example of all the different things that could occur. Mm. The question that will be asked, though, is, how do I create that? And obviously, we've shared some insights, some different experiences that we've gone through around that. But what do the findings tell us about what to kind of look out for and start to, you know, start to thinking about immediately in order to implement a kind of a quick win, if you like?
Yeah. So if you're working as part of a sporting institution, there are some organizational changes that you can make that will enable the parent-coach relationship to thrive. So there's something in the literature called a role intermediary. This is something that came through in our data sets. They felt that one person was missing to connect the coaches to the parents. Someone who, quote unquote, could take all of that headspace away from the coach. Someone who could answer queries about, you know, left bags, left boots.
Dear parent rep.
A parent rep it could be, yes. But it's not without its risks, okay? So for this parent rep, you would need strong interpersonal skills, okay? Coaches, if someone like this was brought on board, coaches could feel that they could get away with neglecting this relationship because they have this person who deals with all the parents. So coaches, bit by bit, could avoid parents entirely. So there's some things to be aware of if you were to bring a role intermediary on board. I would suggest it to be a voluntary position, maybe a former player's parents, you know, a former academy parent who has been involved in the academy, who you have great relationships with, who was never getting into any rifts with other parents. Because if you were to make it paid, then there's, right off the bat, an unequal power dynamic. So their loyalties will lie with the club, not necessarily the parents. So you want someone who's fixed in the middle, who can go back and forth and almost be a conduit.
And I think it's a great point because, you know, if it's one of the things that you often kind of overlook, isn't it? That power dynamic piece around, as soon as you get paid to do something, well, actually, you got allegiance to something now.
Exactly.
You know, you're watching your paycheck, whether you like it or not. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, everything that you've mentioned is basically what I've just recruited in the club that I'm working with. We've got now parent reps at each age group. And the idea was quite simple because I'm kind of the one overseeing the environment a little bit. I was getting bombarded by messages and requests and this and that from all of the different parents. But what would happen is I'll put a message out addressing exactly what their questions were before the questions even came in.
Yeah.
Like, well, have you not read what I've just said? And then I'd get a message from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe upwards of 50 people around the same thing. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? read your message. And I'd like to consider myself quite meticulous and, you know, with the attention to details. I know what questions are going to come out from what's about to be said or what questions might already be arising. So I kind of try and be proactive with that. I said, you know, scratch this. We're getting parent reps at each group. They're the only ones that can communicate with me from now on.
Problem solved.
Problem solved. They can deal with the questions. because quite simply, I ain't got time to respond to 50 individuals, but I can speak to a group of 6 or 7 people. And I'll have that conversation with them. I'll give them the clarity they need and they can communicate it back. But even if they copy and paste it, just keep copying and paste, copy and paste, copy and paste. but no, it's a great point. So, I mean, you know, building on that, any other strategies or considerations for people to think about?
Another one could be to make it a focus of club events to improve parent-coach relationships. So at the minute, you know, I very much doubt that it's on the agenda to improve the relations. But you don't have to just have one event focusing entirely on that. You could try and hit a few birds with one stone, and it could be a focus, not necessarily the focus. So in doing so, you would just bring it to the forefront of, you know, coaches' minds when doing this event.
Any examples of what that could be?
So an example in the club that I was doing research in, to when they were onboarding parents, they would have a dinner at the stadium. So this was almost them wooing the parents. So that's one way that you can do it.
Definitely, definitely. Look, JP, you know, it's really fascinating because, you know, it's not every day you come across someone who specializes or who wants to really take big interest in this particular area. But, you know, if we go back to one of the key things we talked about earlier, it can either supplement or contradict.
Yes.
The coach. But I think it's such an overlooked piece within youth development, isn't it? I mean, it's untapped in the way that untapped to the point where we don't actually know how much impact we can get from a good parent-coach relationship. And then you hear about all the ones where the parent has a great relationship with the coach, Yeah. Maybe not so much in football, because I think, you know, maybe unlike an individual sport, you probably spend, unless you're fortunate enough to be in one environment for your whole journey, you're probably going to come across hundreds and hundreds of different coaches. Or rather, the number will be greater than not. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think in an individual sport, it's probably very different. Once you've got that relationship, you're kind of keeping that. Yeah, that's just what my naivety tells me anyway. So I guess, you know, I think it's such an untapped piece that, you know, coaches can... My words to coaches sometimes are you being useful with your time? Or are you being effective? Right? Now, for me, the effective is all, again, about becoming even more efficient. In order to become more efficient, you become, you know, you'd be able to maximize your time. Are you turning every stone possible within that? Or are you leaving some of them unturned? And if you are leaving them unturned, it's not to say that's a right or wrong, but have a reason why it's unturned, rather than it being one that you don't even know the stone exists, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So for me, this is probably that. This isn't a stone. This is a bloody rock. They unturn, you know, if you turn this one over, you can accelerate that process so much, because as difficult as parents can be, as challenging as they can be, like I said, for me, my own experience and my observations, it's never because they don't have the right intentions or they don't want the best for the child. It's often because they're miseducated, undereducated, or misinformed in many cases. So can we tap into that, support them, help them develop as much as we would with the players? You know, think of them as part of the player development process. They're a tool. The same way you might use stop, stand still, the same way you might use Q&A, the same way you might use guided discovery, use the parent.
Mm-hmm.
Use the parent. And I think that's probably the best way to kind of look at it from my perspective. Any final words for you?
No, just to echo what you said. Basically, this is a huge rock, and you know, many coaches don't want to turn it over. Because there'll be loads of creepy crawlies hiding up underneath that rock, and they don't want to face them. But I think doing so, you create a better culture for the club that you're working in, and allow the coach parent coach relationship to thrive. We have came a long way. I know there was a very famous quote about a coach that basically said, "Sometimes the best team to manage is a team full of orphans," just because, you know, you don't have to deal with any parents. But whereas there was a total dismissal, I think we are moving in the right direction, which is promising.
Amazing. And JP, you know, obviously, you know, this is your area of research. I don't know how far that's going to go, but, you know, is there any way people can get in touch with you to find out more about your work in this area and a little bit more about you, maybe?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn. I'm also on Twitter, JP_Carefoot. Of course, I'm happy to chat with people. I'm also trained to deliver any psychoeducation workshops. So if you're working within a club and you think that parents or coaches could benefit from a little workshop, then get in touch. Yeah.
Amazing. JP, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. And hopefully there's some rocks that are about to be unturned. Or rather, turned.
Thank you, guys.
Take care, man.
Bye now.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram @TheCoachesNetwork or on Twitter @TheCoachesNet. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.